Looks like you already visited At Home this spring. The patio looks great, but why the makeover?
Because we're hosting the block party. Because Sunday dinner's moved outdoors. Because, oh, Hunter's graduation and Emily's baby shower. And because sometimes I can just sit back and enjoy it.
Explore At Home's expanded selection of patio decor, like cushions starting at $9.99 and garden themes from modern to coastal. At Home, the home decor superstore. Any style, any budget, any reason to redecorate. Visit one of our three Austin area At Home superstores today.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hello there. Welcome to the Frogs of War podcast. I'm your host for this episode, Jamie Plunkett, managing editor of Frogs of War, and I'm here with NFL Now host Mark Istook to talk a little bit about all of the Horned Frogs that were drafted over the weekend, as well as some frogs that went undrafted but have now signed with teams. Mark, thanks for jumping on with us today. How are you doing?
Me.
So, we had five Horned Frogs drafted, five signed to this point as undrafted free agents. And I'm curious to know, of the 10 guys that are out there now with new NFL homes, who do you think is in the best position to succeed?
That's a great question. I think it's a tough question to answer just because it's not just about who is the best player or who has the best potential to be an NFL star. It's also who is in a great position to fit into their team. And I think the easy answer would be Josh Doctson with Washington, just because I think he provides a big target for Kirk Cousins, a great red zone target, and he's got a chance to come in and compete. I would have loved to have seen him land on a different roster personally. I thought he would have been spectacular in Minnesota or Cincinnati, so a little bit of a surprise to see him go to Washington. However, you know that there's an opportunity for him to see a lot of balls thrown his way. So I think that helps him out. And I think if you look at Colby Listenby as well, you've seen how some of those speedsters have played on that offense before, and I'm optimistic that he'll be able to find a role in Buffalo. So fingers crossed for both those guys, obviously.
Yeah, definitely. The receivers are both in good positions, I think, in Washington and in Buffalo. With Doctson specifically, you know, there have been rumors that the Redskins are trying to move either Pierre Garçon or DeSean Jackson at some point, either before the season or they're just going to let them walk in free agency. Do you see them, now that they landed Doctson in the first round, more inclined to maybe trade one of those guys or get rid of them before the season starts?
Well, anytime you have a solid pass-catching option, it does squeeze out the opportunity for targets for anybody else. I think the fact that he's not exactly those type of receiver, he's not that speedy, shifty guy who that plays like DeSean Jackson or Garçon does. He's the bigger, reliable, potential wide receiver one target. So that maybe doesn't bode as negatively for them, but I think they have liked what Jordan Reed has done as a tight end by position, but really plays just like a big wide receiver. And I think they like the idea of getting bigger. And if that's your goal, then you don't necessarily need two of those kinds of guys like Garçon or DeSean Jackson. So who they hold on to, who they don't, you know, we'll find out and see what they choose to do. But again, you know, there's only so many passes to go around.
So the next frog taken after Doctson was Derek Kindred in the fourth round to Cleveland. You know, I've got my opinions about the Cleveland Browns organization. They're trying to turn things around, though. They've got a new front office. Some Moneyball-style approach is happening in that front office now. How do you see Derek Kindred fitting into that system that has actually a relatively decent secondary already in place?
Well, I think it's going to be curious to see just what that defense looks like, because anytime a new head coaching regime comes in, they're going to make changes, they're going to make tweaks, and obviously they play in a physical division in the AFC North, and luckily for Derek Kindred, he's a physical safety. He's a guy who can lay the wood. In fact, that was one of the knocks on him in the scouting reports, was that he often looked for the big hit and sometimes would whiff on tackles as a result. But if you're playing in a hard-hitting division, we know he's a guy who can knock people flat. So it remains to be seen how that defense will shape up under head coach Hugh Jackson. But I think if they wanted a guy who can certainly lower the shoulder pads in that division, they got one.
Yeah, and I mean, there's no doubting his toughness, right? He played all of last year with a hurt collarbone.
A broken collarbone, yeah.
Yeah. But do you see – so if he suffers an injury like that in the NFL, obviously that would probably sideline him for a while, and there's no guarantee that he comes in and sees the field right away. He was a fourth-round pick, and those guys are kind of always on the fence, you know, until they get some experience under their belt. But do you see injuries possibly affecting how much time he sees early on?
Well, that's a great question. I think a bigger issue for him is just going to be how quickly he picks up the defense, because I don't have his statistics in front of me, but watching him, and I feel like I probably saw every one of his snaps at TCU, he felt like one of those guys that every year progressed, every year picked up the defense, every year got more and more comfortable, thought less, reacted more, and that's absolutely the norm for Gary Patterson's defenders because of the type of defensive schemes they run. But if he continues that learning curve at the next level, it's going to take him a while to get adjusted to the speed of the NFL game and the complexity of NFL offenses. But he may be one of those guys that you're less concerned about seeing the field in year one, and maybe it's good for him to just be healthy that year and learn as a backup and really hit the ground running in year two or down the road. I don't have the Browns depth chart in front of me, but I hope he's one of those guys that you see progress every year. You kind of saw that same thing with Jason Verrett, both in a TCU uniform and in a Chargers uniform too.
Yeah, that's some pretty good insight. I will be following him closely, more specifically than some of these other guys that we're going to talk about here in a minute, just because he was one of my favorite players on the field last year. Was really crucial in improving the passing defense from the start of the year to the end, just because of his leadership in that unit. And so it'll be really interesting just to see how his arc progresses in the NFL. But going back to Colby Listenby for a minute, staying on the topic of injuries, though, you know, he's been banged up the majority of this season, missed several games, missed the combine because of an injury, missed pro day because of an injury. How do you think those injuries affected his draft stock as we progressed into day two and day three?
They definitely didn't help him, that's for sure. If you look at a Will Fuller, who the Texans take in the first round, he's a guy that had some drop issues, and Colby had his drops at TCU too, but he was a pretty sure-handed guy. A lot of times you get speed or hands and not both. And if you look at some of the difficult catches that Colby Listenby made at TCU, there's no question he's a guy who could stretch defenses and legitimately stretch them because he's a threat to catch the ball, not just a guy who can blaze on a seam route. So I think the fact that he didn't quite have the body work because he played in an offense where we aired it out a lot, and you wonder if that skews the stats, and you wonder how that affects his ability to get open, et cetera. So all those little things add up, and then you see a guy like Will Fuller go instead of Colby Listenby, where he'd had if he had a super productive senior year and been healthy the whole year. I'm not saying he would have supplanted Will Fuller in that draft spot, but you think he would have gone earlier than the sixth round to Buffalo.
Yeah, definitely. You know, because I think one of the things that is not well known about Listenby is that he's actually a pretty good route runner. Like you said, he's got great hands, and he's obviously a burner, but he was capable of running some other routes besides that fly pattern right down the sideline. So, you know, I think that if he stays healthy, he does have a really good chance not only of making the Bills squad, but making an impact.
Yeah, and I think that offense, they've shown the willingness to throw the ball deep and send somebody on those routes that he excels at. And if he can expand his skills and be the kind of route runner that they can rely on, not just on deep routes, but across the board in the entire route tree, that's going to be where he makes a difference. And if you read the Star Telegram, for folks that read the Star Telegram article this past week about his conversion from a high school player to a college player and the learning curve there as well, I mean, that's the thing with all of these guys, is that you got to make that transition and develop yourself. And for some of them, sliding into the sixth round is just the motivation that these guys need to really double down and work hard at improving their skill set so that they can compete, because the margins between the guys that are starters and the guys that aren't at this next level are so razor thin. You've got to do every single thing you can to separate yourself.
Yeah, most definitely. Most definitely. So moving on a little bit to the Seattle Seahawks situation, they took two frogs. They drafted one. They drafted center Joey Hunt, and then they signed Trevon Boykin as an undrafted free agent. Starting with Joey Hunt, the Seahawks seem to be fond of TCU centers and long snappers up there. So what are you thinking?
Apparently.
Yeah, and so Hunt is a little undersized. So what do you think about his NFL projections? Because he is pretty mobile, but he's a small kind of guy.
Yeah, I mean, I am probably not the best judge of offensive line talent, and certainly every team has different ways that they scheme their line and what they want their guys to do, what they ask them to do. I know they like the fact that he called a lot of the blocking schemes for TCU during his time there as a center. And if you watch their line over recent years, they have been one of the more mobile lines, and they're not the 6'6", 360-pounders across the line as much as some other teams are. So I think maybe the fact that he's shown an ability to be a little bit more nimble might help him. Obviously, you think he's got to get a little bit stronger. I don't remember what his bench numbers were at the pro day. It might have been fairly impressive. I don't have it in front of me, but
Mark Cohen tweeted it out. Let me see if I can find it.
Yeah, 38 reps maybe, or 33 reps. I don't remember, but you know, all of these guys, if you're an offensive lineman taken after the first couple of rounds, you've got strength and weight to put on and size and all that stuff. But they sounded high on him, and not just the usual blow smoke, we love our draft pick kind of stuff. So hopefully he can find a place in the middle on that line, which has had its own share of turnover in recent years too. So they would like some consistent play there.
Yeah, that's definitely kind of the trend that I noticed with TCU linemen that got picked up in the draft, you know, with Hunt and with Big V and with Knapp, I guess, as an undrafted free agent, was that they all went to teams who were desperate really for some consistency and some continuity along their offensive line, with Vitae in Philly and with Knapp in Indianapolis especially. So do you think that there's a shot, especially with Big V after he was drafted by the Eagles, of those guys ending up as impact players early on in their career? I know that you just said that you're not a big offensive line analyst.
I think it's tough A, with offensive linemen, but B, with guys that are taken rounds 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and then the undrafted guys, because at some part you're taking flyers on guys with the hopes that they can make an impact. And if 3 out of 7 or 4 out of 7 of your draftees make a legitimate impact, you're usually going to think, hey, that was a pretty decent draft. So it's a numbers game. Again, with Big V in Philadelphia, he's in the same situation Derek Kindred is in Cleveland. It's a new coaching staff, a new group of guys to impress. You have to think that everybody there is going to be fighting for a roster spot. So it may be more up for grabs than it might have been had he gone to a team with an established platoon of guys and an established head coach, where you don't have somebody coming in really trying to get his own guys and his own style of play installed.
Gotcha. That makes sense. So Boykin is with Seattle. I feel like that's a pretty good landing spot for him, don't you?
I love it. I think it's great. And I think it's, as much as I would love to not see him have Vernon Adams nipping at his heels, the fact that they brought in Vernon Adams too, I think probably is a good thing in that it will force him to work that much harder, having a guy nipping at his heels as he chases someone else. And I personally feel like if you're a guy like Boykin, Russell Wilson is absolutely the quarterback whose tape you should be digesting as much of as you possibly can. So to be able to be there with him in camp in a situation where they would love to find a guy who can be a true legitimate backup to Russell Wilson, I think it's a great landing spot for Boykin, and probably one of the better opportunities he could have hoped for with the way his senior year ended, both on the football field and prior to the Alamo Bowl.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I just want to – I have a clarifying question for you, because, you know, the Seahawks signed Boykin to a contract, but they've invited Vernon Adams to participate in tryouts. So
yeah, the rookie mini camp, which is another opportunity for them to take a deeper look at guys, get them in the building, So I don't know enough about contractually how that stuff works out and the pros and cons of all that, but it would make me think that, A, Boykin had a leg up, and B, the fact that they paid him the max signing bonus you can give undrafted free agents makes me think that they wanted to make sure that he ended up in Seattle and not someplace else.
Well, yeah, his skill set definitely mirrors that of Russell Wilson's. But do you think that there's a chance, say that, Vernon Adams performs very well and they decide to sign him too, or, you know, I know that they're still looking at Tavares Jackson, who's been there as a backup in recent years. Do you think that there's an opportunity there for Boykin to slide over at wide receiver on a team that, you know, outside of maybe one or two names, really is kind of lacking in that area?
The hard part, I think, is his 40 numbers were not head turning at the combine. And had he come in and run a 4.6 or 4.5, and I'm one of those people who thinks sometimes we make too big of a deal out of those numbers. When you think about the difference over 40 yards, you're in a 4.6 and a 4.5, it's a snap of a finger. And how often are guys running 40 yard routes where you would actually see that difference? Quickness is a, you know, more valuable commodity for some of those guys. Regardless, the numbers didn't jump off the page. And if he gets in camp and he shows, hey, I can return some punts and you can use me as a guy underneath and I can be twitchy and I can move the chains, then there's no question that teams will look at him, whether it's the Seahawks or if he puts some stuff on tape during the preseason and other teams get a chance to take a look at it. It's just hard to know without having seen a tremendous body of work from him at TCU how much they're keying on that. I mean, everything I've read, it says they brought him in to compete as a quarterback, which I think is, for Boykin, the best-case scenario.
Yeah, I think I've read, I don't know, the Seattle Times, I think is what it is. The paper up there, they said something about that this morning, I think, or yesterday afternoon.
Yeah, I haven't seen anything yet that says they're asking them to make a switch, so.
Yeah. Yeah, hey, I agree. I think that's the best situation for him, and especially, you know, working out closely with a guy like Russell Wilson. I mean, that can't be bad. Let's just say it can't be a bad thing for him.
Right, and in a great organization, too. So it's not just like you get to play alongside one of the guys who should be a role model at that position with that style of play, but also to be in an organization that's top-notch, that's run the right way, that you're in an awesome locker room. I think it's a great place for him to have landed.
Do you see any other Horned Frogs getting picked up at this point? Maybe guys that haven't been drafted? We have Aaron Green that went to the Rams, and that's going to be a tough thing to break into there with guys like Gurley and Mason far ahead of him on that roster. You've got, Overchrome. With the Jaguars, obviously, kickers rarely get drafted unless you're Aguayo out of Florida State this year.
Right.
Yeah, let's chat about Overchrome for a minute. Do you think that he has a chance to unseat Myers in Jacksonville?
I mean, that's a great question. I don't know how much he's making, so sometimes it ends up being a dollars and cents consideration. If you've got somebody that you are just a hair less efficient than, as a new guy, a rookie coming in, but you're a whole lot cheaper, sometimes it's a financial consideration, which is, again, why it's a little surprising that Aguayo got picked, just because that means you're tying up a lot of money. You tied up a draft spot and more money in a kicker than you might if you went and found another young guy. They obviously are very high on his skills and think he can get the kind of points for them that will justify that selection, that high of a selection. But Overcome, I mean, it all – does he come into pick well? And nothing would surprise me.
Yeah. I wonder if Jameis was in the draft room when they drafted Aguayo. That might make more sense.
Hey, he said he was willing to give up some of his salary for them to get Jalen Ramsey, so maybe he made the same argument for Aguayo.
There you go. Maybe Aguayo can play corner. We just don't know it yet.
Yeah.
Well, we appreciate you coming on, Mark. That's pretty much all I've got for you. Do you have any other general thoughts on how the Horned Frogs look as they head into camp?
I think it was awesome. I think it was great to see five guys get their names called. I think it was wonderful to see five guys picked up pretty quickly as undrafted free agents. I mean, the Boykin signing felt like it happened almost immediately. I think they were on the phone basically as soon as the draft was over and they were allowed to make those kinds of calls. So – obviously every TCU fan is going to want to see 10 guys drafted in the first three rounds, and we feel like there's that kind of talent there. I think if you step back and you look at the number of guys that were competing this year and the way that this season shook out, having Josh Doctson go as a first rounder, who would have thought that a couple years ago when he transferred in from Wyoming? I still remember seeing his circus catch against Minnesota, not last year, but the year before, and thinking, hey, this guy, I mean, I knew he could play, but that he could really play. And then you see this year those whispers that, hey, maybe Doctson's a higher draft prospect than Trevon Boykin. That almost seemed like heresy at first, and then he ends up going where he does. It's just awesome. Such a cool moment for him and for the Frog family to be able to root for those guys and to see their names called and kind of join them on their journey toward achieving their goal of being an NFL player.
Yeah, absolutely. It definitely is fun to watch. And, you know, hopefully we see more guys going higher up in the draft in years to come.
It feels like a trend that will not be reversed anytime soon. Fingers crossed.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. All right, well, Mark, thank you so much. Again, that was Mark Istook, NFL Now's host and notable TCU alum. Thanks, Mark, for coming on.
Hey, appreciate the time. Go Frogs.
Absolutely, go Frogs. All right, and that'll just about do it for the Frogs of War podcast this time around. We'll be back with you soon. Take care.
Looks like you already visited At Home this spring. The patio looks great, but why the makeover?
Because we're hosting the block party. Because Sunday dinner's moved outdoors. Because, oh, Hunter's graduation and Emily's baby shower. And because sometimes I can just sit back and enjoy it.
Explore At Home's expanded selection of patio decor, like cushions starting at $9.99 and garden themes from modern to coastal. At Home, the home decor superstore. Any style, any budget, any reason to redecorate. Visit one of our three Austin area At Home superstores today.